Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Land for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Tis the season to be investing. Fa-la-la-la-la-la-la-la-la. Yep, I've been wanting to do that for a long time. Now, if you've been following my show, you know that I am both professionally and personally concerned about the Canadian citizen, from the poorest to the middle class to beyond. Well, I don't worry so much about the rich because, well, you're rich and you have what you need. It's everyone else I'm concerned about. We often hear that Canadians are not saving enough or investing enough for their future. We're spending on our credit cards, our homes, our cars, our kids. Well, that is if you have kids. But everything is becoming more expensive. You know, our property taxes, utility bills are going up, food, clothing, that vacation you would like to take, and what's wrong with taking a vacation? Living within our means has become a real challenge. We all want or need to be able to put food on the table, clothes on our back, and a roof over our head. Now, on the other hand, we'd like to have some life luxuries. And what's wrong with having a decent car to drive or personal or family vacation once in a while? And the ability to go out for a nice dinner at least once a month, wouldn't that be really nice? Well, interesting enough, some Canadians can't do that, and some people probably do it maybe too much. Now, add on your own personal interest, club membership, going to school, playing music, being in the golf game, it all adds up. What about your health and fitness? You know, as you get older, you might, again, want a health and fitness club membership. That's a possibility. I know I mentioned club membership already, but what about health foods or healthier foods? Medication, physio, massage therapy, and the list goes on. You know what I do? I feel like I'm writing my own life budget. Like I'm having a conversation with my spouse right now. We're going through the whole list of things that we think about when we talk about our finances. All the things add up. Yet we need to invest in our future. And this is the conversation, like I mentioned, I have with my wife all the time. When the dust settles and we reach the age of retirement, you know, what is the question you're asking? Do I have what I need? Will I have what I need in order to retire or move forward? Will I have enough for my kids' education? Will I have enough to go on that vacation I want? There's all sorts of things. Well, you know, I like to reach out to people in the financial industry and to come and help Canadian families, the Canadian citizen, to be more financially successful. I think that's extremely important. So today, we're going to talk a bit about the long game and the short game in your financial success with my returning guest, who always makes my show fun, Tom Aldridge, and his new partner, Kevin Rouse, from the Investors Group. Guys, welcome to the show. Go and say something, guys. Don't leave me hanging.
Thanks for having us, Richard.
Good. Tom, Kevin. Kevin, I hope I got your last name correct.
You nailed it.
I nailed it. Well, that's good. I know that just before the show started, we were talking a little bit about the pronunciation of names, and I always find it's a bit of a challenge because names are one of those things that can be spelled one way and totally stated differently.
Well, I went to a French school when I was a kid, so I was called Rouse, Rose, everything else but Rouse. So
but
thank
Rouse.
You for getting it right
but
the first
I got
time.
Rouse correctly. Good. Good. Kevin, you know, you're the newbie on the show, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I started off in the business, I would say, 14 years ago. I was 10 years old. Excuse me, I still have that cold.
You got
I'm
that
trying to get
cold
over.
That's going around. You're going to have some tough times.
I'm trying to get over it, but it's a little more difficult. But I started at 10 years old. I was just had my first allowance, and I had $50 to my name. And my parents had a financial advisor, and they said, you know what, maybe you should go talk to him. Now, there's very few financial advisors out there who want $50, but as a favor for my parents, he decided to take me on, and I've been with him ever since until I actually started in the business.
Okay. So before we talk about your business or being in the business of financial advisors, tell us a little about you personally. I mean, getting an allowance at, you said, 10 years of age? Was that? Was
oh, I'm sure it was earlier than that. I probably just spent it all before 10.
All on candy and stuff or games or whatever it might be. You're a Winnipeg boy?
I'm a Winnipeg boy. Born and raised River Park South. I've been there for 26 years now.
26 years. So you still live there in that space?
Still live in the South End. I can't get out of it.
Can't get it. It's amazing. You know, like I found the other day I had to write about my time in Winnipeg. And I lived in Winnipeg from 77 to 87 in the South End of the city. And then I've been back here the last 7 years. I had to go off for work and stuff, recession and everything. All sorts of weird stuff happened in the 80s. But yet I still still live in the south side of the city. It's like, you know, if I had moved when 77 into the north side, I'd live there. If I had lived on the east side, I probably would have lived there. It's what you become familiar with.
I find that a lot of people, depending on what end of the city you live in, will migrate to a certain area. As a South boy, we all want to live in River Heights, and now that's my dream is River Heights.
You know, it's funny you would say that, because that's actually what my wife and I wanted, and we had gone away for a while, and then when we came back, I said, okay, there's only one area of the city I'm going to live in, and it's the River Heights type area. And that's because that's what I wanted when I was a kid, you know? But that's not where I lived when I was a kid. I was in Waverly Heights and Fort Richmond and stuff. Tom, what about yourself? I mean, you've been on the show a few times, but, you know, let's do a reintro for you, too.
Yeah, thanks, Richard. It's nice to be back again. You know, happy new year. We're into 2018 here. Yeah. First few days back, I suppose. And so there's a few different things that are going on right now. But, you know, I'm happy to be on the show. We've, of course, got Kevin as a partner. Yeah. And as I've said before, I've been in the business for quite some time, about 15 years, and Winnipeg as well, born and bred. Had the opportunity to move to Toronto with a financial firm, and stayed there for exactly 11 months and 28 days as a prison
you
sentence.
You were counting.
Yeah.
11 months and 28
yeah,
days.
Yeah. So, but I was able to secure a position back here with a large financial firm, and been happy to continue that that journey here in Winnipeg.
So out of curiosity, are you a River Heights boy?
I am, actually. yeah, but born and bred in St. James.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But however, the Minister of Scheduling Affairs and Life, a.k.a. my wife, grew up in the River Heights and thought it would be a good place for us to settle.
It's, you know, it's interesting how you end up living, or where you end up living, because of your wife. Because I live where I live in Winnipeg because of my wife, right? So, and interesting enough, too, I mean, I always like to share my own personal stories. This is going to be a very personal story. Where we kissed for the first time is only two blocks away from my house.
Ah.
Right? So this is like, oh, okay. Okay. I shared a personal story there. Yeah. You're both into the financial investing type game. Kevin, I'm going to throw it back to you, because you started talking about getting into financial investing. It sounded to me like you started to develop some good habits when you were just a boy.
Well, I have my parents to thank for that, obviously. There's not a lot of 10-year-old boys who are thinking about the long game investing. But you know, it all worked out for me, because the sooner you start, the better you're going to be in the long run.
Yeah. Okay. So in those early days, I'm curious, because I like to think that there's other parents out there or small business people have kids, and they're, you know, like, how do I get my kids to be more financially savvy? So what was like some of the first things that you invested in?
Well, I was with Investors Group, and we invested mainly in mutual funds.
Okay.
The thing I enjoyed about going to my annual meetings with my financial advisor was I was 10, 12, 13 years old, and he was explaining to me fixed income and equity, and I would nod, and I would try to make him think that I was the smartest guy in the room that was 10 years old. And at the end of the day, I didn't know very much about it. But it was the fact that I was able to build that trust with my financial advisor over the long term, that I was able to know he had my best interest at hand, and I was able to trust him with my money.
Okay. I think that's a great point. We're going to have to take a short break. But when we come back, maybe what we'll do is we'll kick off with the idea of creating trusting relationships with a financial advisor and what that would look like. This is Richard Lannan for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lannan, and I'm hanging out with Tom and Kevin from Investors Group. You know, Kevin, just before the break, and I think Tom, you support this too, you start talking about trust a bit, you know, trusting your advisor, sitting in this room, thinking you're, as a kid, the smartest guy in the room, but really, you know, you were just taking this all in. How important is it to actually develop a trusting relationship with a financial investor or advisor?
I would say it's the most important thing that's part of our job there, Richard. Everyone has different financial needs, and there's no right answer for one person. So the main part of our job is to getting to know our clients. And you're not going to get to know your client if they don't trust you. We ask the hard-hitting questions, and we expect them to answer truthfully, or we're not going to be able to give them the advice that's necessary for them.
That's interesting you would say that. So you ask the hard-hitting questions. So that's I want to go there now because you said it. So give me an example of a hard-hitting question.
Well, Richard, we ask for everything. We ask to know how much they make. We ask to know how much they have in their RSPs. We ask to know how much they have in their TFSAs. We want to know how much debt they have, because there's no reason to be investing if they're paying 19% interest in their credit cards.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. You got to get that all under control. Tom, you want to sort of weigh in on this?
Yeah, I think there's a twofold. It's two-pronged, too, as well. I mean, Kevin, as a sort of the chief strategist of our practice, and one of the things that happens is that a lot of people will focus basically on the hard stuff, you know, like Kevin did mention, you know, tax rates, TFSA levels, rates of return, etc. But there's a lot of soft questions that need to be asked as well. How do you feel about this? What makes you tick? You know, you talked about things like, you know, what's going to happen in retirement, but how are you going to feel? What are you going to actually do? You know, when we have clients come in and the market is gyrating or there is a lot of things going on, how do you actually feel about that? You know, when you're dealing with family members and money, especially nowadays, there's a lot of succession planning going on. So how do you feel that, you know, part of the assets or the business or the farm or just that plain old vanilla TFSA is going to go to your brother and not you? That's a big deal. We're talking about, you know, some deep down thoughts here. So those are the type of things that need to be explored as well.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like there's a lot of details in the whole process when you're starting to explore things. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, and that's the other thing too as well, is we've had the opportunity to work with a business coach and a business advisor over the last little while, and we've been able to develop four different core values that come along with our practice, and we suggest that for any business. And one of the core values is process, and so we have to take a look at, you know, when we're talking with clients, existing, prospective, or future clients, is that are we working through the same process every time? You know, and we want to make sure that we're not missing anything. And if the client's not interested or not willing, there is that trust issue at that point. Is they're not willing to show us all the cards. I mean, at the end of the day, everyone has dealt the hand they're given, right? And you can make changes as you go. But those five cards, our job is to rearrange them in a most efficient fashion to get you the best hand possible.
Yeah, and that's in the long run.
Correct.
I think you guys are talking more long run, not short term type scenario. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, but not so much even then. I mean, at the end of the day, we do work for a company called Investors Group, and some people take the name and say, Tom, you know, I don't have any money to invest. As you had opened up in your opening in today's show, you talked a lot about people that, you know, just don't have extra money to invest. But, you know, we're talking about clients who have a considerable amount of assets that need to have, you know, their current assets rearranged. It could be, you know, their current debt. It could be, a cash flow problem. It could be, you know, different things like that. So it's sort of like not saying that the long game is always most important, and we have to keep that in mind. But, you know, like any good golf game, you know, some of the most important shots are on the green.
Yeah, it's a short game.
Sure.
Right. Yeah, that's actually a really good analogy to put it. And depending on where you are in your investment life cycle, we'll call it that, right? You might be playing a long game, which, Kevin, I think you gave a great example of that, starting out when you're 10 or 12 years of age. I mean, that's a long game, you know, especially if you're looking for that sort of 55. But then you might be 50 or you might be 55 and you want to move on by the time you're 60. That could be an example of where, you know, 5 years and you got a short game.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing too is I think what you just we've had this conversation with clients before where people are thinking short term at age 55, 56, 57. You know, they've decided, okay, they're going to pull the pin. Now, yeah, okay, that's a big decision over a very short amount of time, but they're actually going to be making a decision which is the last third of their life.
Yes.
1 to 30, building a family. 30 to 60, building your career and your assets. 60 to 90, living it out. So you're making decisions actually may seem short-term, but in fact, you're actually another third of your life.
Another third of your life. And you know, it's interesting you would say that because so the idea of breaking your life up in thirds, right? That 1 to 30, the 30 to 60, and then 60 to 90. To 90. Especially in today, we keep talking about longevity. You know, we're living longer. We've got the medical system to actually help us prolong our lives. So that's a big change. You know, what do you do? I want to top into the 60 to 90 thing, because if you're making decisions for that time period, that's a whole other area of thinking about. You know, what are some of the things you might want to consider in that space?
Yeah, I think just recently there's been some changes to pension law. Locally here and internationally, nationally, I should say, is that locally here in Manitoba, you know, there is talk in the last couple of days, in fact, about making changes to locked-in retirement accounts and some of the reasons that they might do it. And it may sound confusing. Really, at the end of the day, what's going on is that, you know, people are living longer. They have higher than expected expected expenses. And these particular accounts are meant to, or they're supposed to last your lifetime. And people are living longer, so that those numbers are shrinking, actually. So the amount you can take out is smaller. So, you know, again, it's just you're making these short-term putts, but they're going to be for long-term gain.
Yeah, and so you need to think about it. Because, I know I'm hammering on this a little bit more, but when you said 60 to 90, I mean, right away I went, well, that's a long game. That's a one-third long game, right? You know, in the third, I was going to say third period. We'll put in that third period, not the third quarter. Could be, right? Yeah. Later on, you live to 120, but there's definitely some stuff that they can consider.
Well, I can jump in and add just another analogy there is that, you know, and then there's the, either positive or negative is the overtime.
Overtime, okay.
Because, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, do you have enough gas in the tank? As a, you know, if we're going to use a hockey analogy, I mean, do you have the right players on the ice to be able to finish the game and be able to finish those shots? I mean, because at the end of the day, we are living. We're living longer and longer, and there seems to be more and more. You know, 60 is the new 40, and 70 is the new 30.
Yeah, and it's interesting you would say that. I mean, I had this whole conversation just last week with another person, and we were talking about the idea that 60 is the new 40, 50 is the new 30, that kind of thing. And for those people who take care of themselves, like if you ever meet anybody who's 60 years of age who really takes care of themselves, they don't look 60. They don't even act 60. I don't even know what 60 is supposed to be anymore, because physically they're out running marathons, they're hiking up mountainsides, they're going on treks in South America, like some serious stuff that my dad's generation, you'd probably never do.
Yeah, and you know, another really important point there is this is talking in the demographics of what, you know, 60-year-olds are doing, but yeah, you have to turn it around, even flipping it to the 30-year-old or even the 20-year-old who's just recently graduated. They're not doing what was expected, let's say.
So what we'll do is we'll take a short break. When we'll come back, we'll talk about doing what's expected. This is Richard Lampersett for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Tom Aldridge and Kevin Rouse, Investors Group, and we've been talking a bit about financial advising and really, I think we've been talking more about just the thinking around it. Isn't that what we've been really talking about? Kevin, you sort of gave me the starting point for this foundationally. Now, we can talk, what's the old term, till the cows come home, about people who are 55 and 45 and everything. But what about the millennium generation? I mean, during the break, we were talking a little bit about the younger people in investing, and it seems like you have a real sense of that. What should they be considering these days?
Well, for most of the younger people or the millennial generation, we are dealing with getting them into their first house. That's their main concern. It has nothing to do with, they're not thinking about their retirement right now. They're thinking about getting into their 3-bedroom house. And the mortgage, getting a mortgage right now is harder than ever in protection of the consumer, sure. But it is still more difficult. So right now, when I sit down with a client, there's different ways you can do it. And you have to really get to know the client. Because if you start locking their money into RSPs where they're going to have to incur taxes if they decide they don't want to buy this house, you're going to make a mess out of things. So again, going back to trust is you have to really know your client before you ever give them sound advice.
I'm just curious about something. So this is going to be me being not connected with the marketplace right now. So I'm going to ask the stupid question, but maybe it's not. From a millennium perspective, use the example of, you know, they want to get into their first house, okay, and they're at that age now. What in our marketplace, what kind of number are they usually needing to borrow? What kind of number are you usually talking about? Are you able to speak to that a little bit?
Well, it really depends on the person, right?
Sure.
We're all going to want different things. We're all going to... I find one of the biggest things is people look at their parents. And I can attest for a sibling of mine who they're trying to keep up with the Joneses, which is just their parents. And they're always going to try and they want it now, where they don't think to themselves that, well, my parents worked for 40 years, 50 years later, and now they have the assets. Now they have the house that they have. But we're a very we want it now generation. And trying to talk them off of that cliff is, again, one of the big parts of the job. It's making sure that they don't try and overextend themselves. And again, the new mortgage rules that have come out are really trying to protect our millennials from themselves.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that because, you know, right away, whenever my guests are talking, I always flash on my own life. And I try to share it. I mean, I think it's a common life with everybody else and that. But I think of our first home and everything, and we put our last $5,000 into that house. Like, we literally took it over not knowing whether we would have food on the table, you know, and it was a fixer-upper. We renovated ourselves and everything. And I think that's what you sort of mean. You know, the parents, I now fall in that category. We've built our way up, and we might have that mid-range home now and everything. But you know what? We started off with a bungalow or a shack or whatever you want to call it, and we've slowly moved up. That could be a real challenge, Tom.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Kevin's bang on too is that although, again, back to sort of different needs at different times in your life, that 1 to 30, 30 to 60, 60 to 90.
Which is great numbering, right?
Yeah, you know, what we go back to, what most, I think a lot of great advisors in our business do have a process, and we can appreciate that, you know, that there are others out there that do this, but it doesn't matter where you are in your financial life, you know, you should be looking at this game plan, and you should be making, you know, the time. And I always like, people start to say to me, you know, I don't have time to do that right now, or can we meet next week, or next month, or next quarter? And, you know, one of the things I'd like to just put it into perspective and say, you know, do you have time to watch an hour of Netflix, you know, once a week?
Yeah.
And of course, all of us do, yeah, right? You know, 8 hours of binge watching. I'm guilty of it big time. But, you know, if you could just allocate, you know, just 15 minutes of that once a week binge watch to, you know, just looking at your finances, and it just starts small. It can be really, really daunting, but working with an advisor or a consultant or whatever we're going to call each other in the future, but just starting out and putting it all on paper. And I call it the ugly family photo. And, you know, there may be things in there or people in there that you really don't want to be in that photo with, but let's just take that photo now. And then what we're going to do is we're going to maybe rearrange that photo in the future, and we might take out the, you know, the crazy aunt that you don't want, you know, involved in that photo. So again, I like to use a lot of analogies. So
it's a good visual,
you know.
And with technology today,
we can delete auntie, crazy aunt, no problem.
Well, and just to add on to that analogy, I mean, I started thinking right away that you know, because of technology, whatever application you're using, you can view your financial portfolio minute by minute now. You know, like you have access to that information depending how you set it up.
Yeah, that's a good point too. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about some strategic planning that we put forth in the future. You know, there is a term out there, the robo-advisor, that is very, very common. You know, you could do it on your own. You know, you control the money in the portfolio, and awesome. You know, kudos to a lot of these algorithms and programs that are out there that'll help you with that. And, you know, Kevin and I are currently using a lot of that technology to help us become what we would consider to be bionic advisors. So we're a little bit of a human content to it, and a little bit of robot to be able to help us help you. Now, so the thing is, though, is that like anything else, you know, I can buy a gym membership, but certainly it's whether or how I use that in the future.
It's how many days a week you go work.
Totally.
Out. Yeah, and then it's what you eat. I think that's a good analogy. But it does beg the question, you know, when you put in the human factor. And I think you and I talked about this just before you came on the show. I said, well, you asked me what I want to talk about. And one of the things I sent you in an email or something was basically, well, if you can do it yourself, why would you have a financial advisor?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've heard that, you know, over and over again.
I think it's a reasonable question. Right?
Absolutely. And there are camps out there that say you can't do it yourself. And by no means, we're not in that camp. There are a lot of great people that have, enough technological, you know, skill set to be able to do that. They understand what's going on. And you know, I was, again, here comes another analogy. I mean, there are a lot of people. For the longest time, I loved working on my car. I loved changing the brakes out. I liked changing my own oil, you know, and it gave me a certain sense of satisfaction. But at one point, I decided that I was better suited to do other things, like maybe spending time with my family rather than spending time with my car. So at some point, I decided to hire a professional to do that for me. Now, and again, it doesn't mean that there can't be a give and take between the advisor and the person doing it. And that's, again, where we're going to be looking at this sort of bionic advisor relationship, where there is a key element of the client who is involved in watching and looking at what's going on, you know, continually. So, you know, it's not behind. It used to be, you know, we'll take care of things. Don't worry about it.
Behind closed doors.
Yeah.
No, the transparency is really huge today, and it's a lot easier. I mean, because let's face it, we could pick anything, Tom. I want to sort of binge on this one a little bit. We can pick any topic area, and then we can look to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram. We can look at any of them, and boom, you know, like you could blow away anything really quick in today's marketplace.
Back to analogies, Google some sort of health condition that you're currently suffering from, and certainly you'll get a number of different comments about what it could be, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and what the treatment plan is going to be. And you may pick the right one. However, you might pick the wrong one.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the news, we've seen that from time to time. And again, it's like we're not trying to say that there's any one way. Kevin and I really love it when we have engaged clients that are questioning and want to know why we did something. And, you know, that's, again, where we talk about some of the questions you should be asking your current advisory relationship is, you know, where is the plan? You know, like, show me. So it's easy to do it on a napkin, you know, in a coffee shop. It's certainly a lot easier to talk about it in a meeting, but show me the numbers.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting way to look at it, too.
Rather than talk products and stuff, and Kim, no doubt I want you to come in on this one too, we can sort of speak products a little bit or things that people might want to consider, you know, but maybe what we'll do is come back and we'll talk about what kind of questions clients should be asking you guys, right, to keep you accountable. Fair enough. This is Richard Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am hanging out with Tom Ulrich and Kevin Rouse. We've been talking a little bit of, I guess not a little bit, about financial investing, but not really from a product perspective. We've been more talking about the trust and the relationship side of things to think about, and depending on which period you're in of your life. And I love that you use that, Tom, the idea of period, and then the idea of overtime. Like, we literally can use a hockey analogy in terms of three periods plus overtime, and whether you make overtime or not, that's a whole other story, right? On many, many levels, right? Not just financially. But it does beg, I think, an important question, because we were talking a little bit about the things that you guys ask clients, but what should a client be asking you guys, or a potential client be asking you guys? Like, when I meet with my financial advisor or somebody new and I'm going to be talking about money, what should I be asking them?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, Richard. There's a lot of changes in the industry that are going on right now behind the scenes, publicly and privately. But one of the things that we find is that the word financial advisor. I've seen articles on whether it's spelled financial advisor with an E versus an O. That gives you different credentials. So the way you
does
spell
it, really?
Yeah,
the way
absolutely.
You spell it gives you different credentials.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always just thought it was sort of a U.S. Canadian thing, right? The language.
As
thing.
Did I. Yeah, yeah. But if you Google advisor. Or advisor, ER or OR, you'll actually find that one is a securities or basically a stock type designation, and the other one would be just about for everything else. So
the catch-all.
Yeah. And in fact, the company that we work for, it stayed away from that particular term altogether, using the term consultant. But besides the point, what we're looking at here is that, you know, one of the first questions you should be talking to your person.
Your
guy or your girl. Tell me a little bit about your credentials. And so maybe I'll share a little bit with Kevin, can share a little bit about what that might look like.
Well, I'd like to just, sorry to go back here, but I'd like to talk more about the A and the O and the E and the consultant. At the end of the day, what it's trying to get at is, are they a fiduciary? Do they have your best interests at hand? And I really believe that comes back, and I hate to just sound like a broken record here, but if you can have that trust, then you're able to, no matter what, be a fiduciary for your client. You are acting in their best interest.
So fiduciary is a big word. What does fiduciary mean?
Fiduciary means you're acting on the best interest of your client.
Which you already said. Which I heard that, but I want to make sure we just have the definition out there.
Yeah, I think I'll just hop in here. You know, the fiduciary is it. So, you know, take all products off the shelf. Take the name off my business card. Take my paycheck off the table.
Yeah.
I'm sitting in front of you, and I'm making a decision that I know is going to move you forward financially, regardless of what we insert, if it's insurance, if it's a mortgage, if it's, you know, a certain type of investment. Take all that off first, and let's just, you and I look each other in the eye, and I'm going to say, is this going to work for you? This will work. And then let's add in everything else after.
That, you know, that's really good, because you know that I speak to a lot of people, and there are times when I'm sitting down and having these conversations, and I think, and what goes through my mind is, they're only interested in a paycheck, right? They don't want to have a meaningful conversation, and they're just sort of hiding it, right? And I think that goes to the heart of what you're saying.
Yeah, and it can be tricky, right? I mean, because the industry is paid for products that they sell. So
yeah.
A great first question that you'd want to talk to is, you know, a great New Year's opening is the question of, how do you get paid?
Yeah, it's a great question. Before we do that one, let's go back to credentials, Kevin.
I will not boomerang that one again for you, Richard.
No, but what do you mean by credentials? Then we'll come back to how do you get paid. I think that's good.
Currently, I would say the highest that we can do in our financial practice is a certified financial planner, a CFP. Now, Tom and I are both studying about 3 hours after work. And I know Tom's an early bird, so he's studying 3 hours before work. I'm not so lucky to be in the same shoes as him. But we have a certified financial planner on our team that we go through for all of our strategies that we want to implement. And again, we're working towards this designation for ourselves.
For yourselves. It's interesting, though, you would say the word team. I love the word team. You know, I know that sometimes when you meet with a professional, you sort of think that they live in a box, right? You're just working by yourself, but you actually have additional resources you're able to tap into, which sort of adds to credentials, doesn't it?
Well, for sure. For a team, now just for the two people in the room right now, I think everyone that's listening can tell that Tom is more of the talkative one and I'm more of the, as Richard said on the break, the relator.
And the relator.
I'll have to make sure that was not too much of an insult. But
no, it wasn't. No, that's just
kidding.
A personality
I'm
side.
Just bugging you, Richard. But no, on our team, we have everything from at our resources, insurance specialists. We have investment specialists. We have a mortgage specialist. We have a lot of different people that are given to us from Investors Group that we're able to rely on and bring into meetings if we so choose and help us with, you know, making the clients financially move forward.
Now, the reason why I bring that up is that I often run into that situation too. I'm a business strategist, and most people know this, right? And they don't stop to think that, you know what, I work with a financial analyst. I work with a research analyst. I have the same idea, right? So it's not just about you. It's actually about what you bring to the table as a team, right? Now, one of the other questions, Tom, you mentioned was just about fees. And as a consumer of investment products, okay, I should be, or our listeners should be asking, you know, what are your fees?
Yeah, and the same thing. This is a well-known fact that there are retail this price. There's, you know, a price that people pay with X amount of assets, and ad finitum on, you know, what you're actually paying. And I think the first question that you want to ask your advisor is, what are the total costs? Like, what is it going to be? And the easiest way to do that is just pick a number, $1,000. So if I invested $1,000, what is the total cost? There seems to be a little bit of give and go on what's being exposed to the investor, but I expect in the next 24 months that's going to change again with regulators continuing to make it in the consumer's advantage to be able to compare everything apples to apples versus.
Yeah. If I'm going to buy a car and I'm looking at a couple of different models, I should be able to compare prices.
Yeah.
You know, period.
And a good advisor should be able to stand on that that price, whether it's 1%, 2%, or 3%.
Or whatever it is.
Right.
And when you're talking percentages or what's going to cost, you're talking about not necessarily right away, you're talking about over time.
That's correct. Yeah. And just in the end, was it up front or is it am I going to write you a paycheck? I'm going to write you a check on a monthly basis? Is it baked into the cost of the goods? I mean, it's well known that a lot of banks and financial advisory services have a baked in cost. But, you know, things have changed dramatically where all that is negotiable. But fees are not the most important part. I know it's an important part of where we're supposed to be. I mean, I want to know what I'm paying, but let's turn that question around and have an advisor be able to prove that they're worth triple that, quadruple. Maybe they should be charging 10 points. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and that's actually quite interesting because that in itself sort of creates a scenario where you should challenge your advisor a little bit. Educate yourself, challenge your advisor a little bit, if you're okay with me saying that. And you know what? I'll use a personal or professional example again. I just came out of a meeting yesterday with a client where we were talking about numbers and he challenged me on the thoughts and everything. And I thought it was great. It was awesome because we had to work that much more to come into agreement what it would be. And I think it's probably the same thing with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And we just try not to dwell on it. But at the end of the day, it is important to the consumer. So we talk a little bit about some of those questions you should be challenging your consultants. So we talk about credentials. We talk about fees. We talk about, you know, one of the other questions you might want to look at is that, you know, what does the plan look like? Where is my plan?
If somebody wanted to get and connect with you, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, the easiest way is just Google. Google Tom Aldridge Investors Group, or you can just Google me, tomaldridge.ca.
And away you go. What a show we've been having. You know, I always enjoy having you guys on, and that if you had a final thought for our listeners, what might that be?
I think the final thought is pretty simple. It's just do it. Just start now. Don't try and push it back any further. It's a new year. Get on it.
I'll jump in. Just execute. Execute, execute. Just get going.
Just get going. Yeah, there's never too late, right? Thank guys for being on the show. I always love it when you come on, Tom. It's been fun. We've done a few other shows where we've talked about the various disciplines. We've talked about estate planning. We've talked about what happens when you die. great for people to go check those shows out. They're on my website. Kevin, thank you for coming on. I want to thank our listeners for actually tuning in today. It's always good that you do. If you have a thought, a question, or idea for a show, just email me at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.